Crackheads, welcome back. We have a storm hitting Dublin right now, but I'm still here talking to you guys on a monstrous week of MMA. I mean, what a weekend it is. As we are talking to you, it's all swirling around us here. The UFC 320 weigh-ins are happening in Las Vegas. There is an event happening in Dubai. PFL, biggest fight of the year, Usman v. Hughes 2. BKFC, tomorrow night in Newark. I mean, my God, you wouldn't be able to catch your breath with all the combat sports that's coming your way this weekend. That said, there is a graphic on this show. It says UFC 320 reaction show. So let us do that right now. Let's react to the weigh-ins because we have ourselves two championship bouts, ladies and gentlemen. Big Ank is on weight. Look at this guy. Stoic. He's gone for full beard, no tash once again, which I think is very impressive and very brave. Here is Poatan, Alex Pereira. Little bit of hair there. He is obviously going to shave that off tonight because that was the deal he made with his fans. Hopefully he will follow through on that. And we've also got, I believe, Mr. Corey Sandhagen, who's also on weight, the challenger to Mirab's crown. And we also have Mirab, who had himself a bit of difficulty on the scales and needed the old, here it is here. Oh my God. You know, this is how I feel getting on the weighing scales every morning when I'm weighing in just to see how I feel about life. I get on first and I go, nope, that's wrong. I'm going to take half my body weight off this and we will try again. Oh, great. I'm still 150 pounds. That's magnificent. Obviously, can't really do that when you're weighing in for a UFC event. Mirab has to hit 135, and the man is looking svelte, let's be honest. However, you can see the longer they stay up there, the facial expression changes. Like, oh my God, why aren't they letting me off this thing? Am I going to have to get the hoop of shame out to make weight? Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? That is, unfortunately for Mirab, exactly what happened. Here it comes, one of the celebrities of the UFC weigh-in. The hoop of shame will come out to not expose his nether regions to the watching world. Not quite there yet. We will get there with the hoop, believe me. But everything is all intact so far with the card. We have not lost any fights, although Daniel Santos and Jusang Yu have come in very overweight. They now have a catch weight of 152.5 because it was meant to be a featherweight fight. Don't really know what happened there. I might have a man who could explain that to me a bit later on, actually, because obviously Chuck, you know, he signed this book deal. He's like, oh, do I do a show on Fridays now? Oh, I don't really care. Ben's like a celebrity now since I made him a celebrity on the crack. Everyone, like, apparently what happened was there's just a massive amount of people outside his house in Missoula trying to get him to sign things. He can't leave. It's a very bad situation that I've put him in. However, they're not the only two great journalists I know. I happen to know the best goddamn journalist in the history of Brazil. A man I worked with at MMA Fighting, a man who's still there at MMA Fighting, the best Brazilian combat sports journalist of all time. It is Guilherme Cruz, and he's wearing the Botafogo jersey. Look at this, ladies and gentlemen. Guilherme, how are you, sir?
I'm speechless. I'm in shock at this. This intro was just magnificent. This Oscar worthy, you doing the play-by-play of a weighing, weighing's replay is just amazing. I'm just shocked. And to know that I'm here replacing Ben and Chuck, I mean, yeah. It makes it even better to know that they're missing this and I'm here to witness the greatness of Pete Carroll. It's a pleasure to be here again, man.
Man, I mean, this is the kind of thing I want them to say. Like, they never say this. They just let me heap the compliments on them and then just sit back like, here's Petey. Guilherme should be a regular. Look at these compliments. Guilherme, we have a lot to talk about. Man, Brazilian MMA has been in the headlines quite a bit over the last week, as you know, because you've been covering it all. I am not just talking about UFC 320. I'm talking about Wanderlei Silva. I'm talking about UFC Rio. We should start with the main man, though, Mr. Poatan. And I want to know, how switched on is Brazil to this fight? Because you were telling me last time we spoke, it must have been over 6 months ago, you're saying, this guy, really, really popular. Obviously, the Globo TV deal isn't quite there. He has since lost the title, though. Like this, since the last time we were speaking. What has that done for Poatan's popularity back home?
It has taken a small hit because, of course, losing doesn't help. But he's still a massive star. He's still number one or number two in Brazil today, like jockeying with Charles Oliveira who has the lead in terms of popularity, because but Poatan is a massive star here. And I mean, it's not the first time he's lost. He has lost to Adesanya in the rematch, and he has got bigger and bigger in terms of star power since then. So he's the type of fighter that doesn't change that much if he's winning or not. People love his charisma, people love the way he acts, the way he talks, or for the most part doesn't talk. So it's he's one of those guys. He has that it factor in Brazil, in the US, in Europe, in wherever you go, people seem to love him. And I don't think he has suffered that much losing the belt. And that's the reason why the UFC is running it back, because Ankalaev is not the most popular of the champions. You can make the case that he could be one of the like top 10 most ignored champions of all time, because people don't. I mean, and he's in that position, even though he beat a popular fighter like Pereira. Imagine if he became champion after that boring fight against Blachowicz, it would be even worse. But now he beat a popular fighter in Pereira in a good fight for him. Like, it was a good performance for him, but it's still no one seems to care that much. So that's why Pereira, huge stars, get this opportunity again. So yeah, I went all over the place to answer your question. But yes, Pereira is still a big star here in Brazil.
Well, he seems to be a big star in Las Vegas because we saw yesterday at the press conference, and I believe we have some footage of this, still very much the favored man in Sin City ahead of this fight.
Что, вот ты же говоришь, что ты сейчас готов. Давайте сделаем это. Я нападу на тебя, вот как ненормальный. Мы это увидим.
Hey, the good thing is you're ready now, so we're gonna see on Saturday. Don't say you...
On Saturday, your manager won't be there to help you.
Шама!
Шама уже давно потушили. No, Шама.
Mentiroso.
Liar. Go ahead.
There is no more Shama. We killed it.
Well, there you go. They're all shamming together. Must bring a tear to your eye, Guilherme, seeing all these Americans getting so behind your guy. But you mentioned something I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned when you were speaking of Pereira how people were drawn to his stoic nature. Didn't say a lot. Chuck Mendenhall fell in love with the guy because of this mysterious element around him. And he admitted on the show last week, he's like, are we getting too much FaceTime with Poatan now? Like, he's doing a lot of talking. Do you think it's Ankalaev that's brought this out in him? How do you feel about this new Poatan who seems to be getting in front of cameras and speaking without any hesitation?
I think Ankalaev is one of the reasons why he's doing that more. But also, he has become such a bigger star in and outside of the sport. So him talking more, him showing himself more, has gotten him more opportunities. Like he's doing movies now. He's traveling all over the world for seminars and simply just making appearances as a superstar. So he now has his YouTube channel where he shows his life. In the past, when he would always say only Shama and all that, he would be like our version of Fedor Emelianenko. Like Fedor, whenever he doesn't speak English, you don't know what he's saying. He never says anything. So he had that mystique with Pereira. Now he's like I feel like he's driving away to a different type of personality that it still works for him, but it's not just the same appeal that with when he was only saying one word answers.
Does it worry you at all that he seems to be this affected by Ankalaev? Like, we've seen the videos of the lads having that argument with Google Translate. That's how me and Guilherme speak to each other when we're in person. We just use, I try my Portuguese, and then he just gives me the phone. He says, listen, mate, it's not happening. But I thought that was a hilarious scene, by the way. These two guys who could rip each other's heads off their shoulders, sitting there speaking into a phone, being like, no, you're a liar. This back. Yeah. I mean, is there any party that's like, this is weird? Like, he is like, you know, a lot of people are like, protect your energy. Don't like show someone how you feel so much. I think it's very effing clear how Mr. Pereira feels about this guy.
Yeah, that interaction was a bit cringy. but yeah, and I do worry because Pereira, he had a long rivalry with Adesanya, but he won all those fights before the last one. So he was in a position that he is now. Now he's in a position that he, this guy that defeated him, that took his belt away, he's acting one way on social media, saying all that, tweeting that. You don't know if that's really him. I don't think so, but yeah, based on comparing to how he acts on the mic, how he acts on press conference, and how he acts on social media, that strikes a nerve on Pereira, it seems. And I do wonder how Pereira is going to respond to that, how he's going to embrace all the energy, all that hate, all that rivalry when he enters the cage. Because, yeah, listen to people around him, you get the impression that Pereira is fully focused like he wasn't before. He's on his YouTube channel, he's talking like how his diet this time was way better than for previous fights, because he knows he has to make weight, and he knows he can't let this amount of weight cut on the like last 3 or 4 days. So he's doing everything better. And that's because he hates the Khabib. That's because he wants his belt back. But when he enters the cage Saturday to look face to face on Khabib, to punch that man in the face and get punched and get kicked, how is he going to react to the emotions of fighting? He's not a kid. He has done it dozens of times. He knows how to react to emotions. He has fought people that had defeated him before in kickboxing, but not at this stage, not being the superstar that he is now. He knows there's a lot of stakes for his future in this fight. I mean, money-wise, finances, he's all set. He's very comfortable. But being a UFC champion changes your life. So it's a big, really, really important fight for him. And I do wonder if that's going to change the way he behaves when he enters the cage.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And I agree with the other thing you said there, which is he has lots of options, because I think we all agreed on Ariel's show during the week that it's hard not to think that the UFC wouldn't be secretly delighted if Poatan won this fight. You know, he's so much more marketable. He's so much more of a commodity than Big Ank, as his marketing people are calling him now. Great name. But there's also, it's not just, like, you know when you have a star in your hands, because it's not just like, well, if this guy wins, all of these things will open up for him. Even with a loss, it feels like we already have a plan for Poatan. Go to heavyweight. There are no stars at heavyweight outside of the champion, Tom Aspinall. I don't know how Tom Aspinall or Andy Aspinall feel about this. I believe because of Poatan's star power, even if he is coming off two losses, he may as well just walk in and fight for the title, because it will put a bigger spotlight on Aspinall. And even if Aspinall doesn't win, you have one of your biggest stars with a belt around his waist now. Do you think that is the move if Poatan comes up short now? Because, you know, he's getting on in years. I feel like this is something we really want to see as MMA fans. Pereira at heavyweight.
Absolutely. I think Pereira's next fight, if he loses, is and to loss that doesn't hurt that much when you're talking about a star of this magnitude. If you go back when he lost to Adesanya, the next day he announced he was going up to 205, and his debut was against Blachowicz in a non-title fight, and he won a split decision. It wasn't like that. There was a flash performance, a fantastic knockout. It was a split decision win, and he fought for the title in his next fight. He's a bigger star now than he was back then, and even if he loses twice to Ankalaev, he goes to heavyweight. He has one win. He's fighting for the UFC title. So the UFC knows that he's 38. He doesn't have any time to waste. The UFC knows that. You're not going to put him to fight Waldo Acosta and Jair Tombeda and Taito Vaza. The UFC is not going to have Poatan fight 3 or 4 times to earn a title shot. He's going to fight for the UFC title with one win at heavyweight. And I think that's the move for him if he loses to Ankalaev.
Well, I got to ask, before we move on to Wanderlei Silva, and I know you're a proud Brazilian man. I mean, I know this is an awkward position to put a man in, But can I ask you, Guilherme? Because Ariel Helwani doesn't do it, you know? Ariel will come in and he'll be like, you know, they're not going to talk to me anymore. So you can use the Ariel Helwani defense if you want to in this case, because you have to talk to these guys all the time. Tell me, Guilherme, who wins this fight and how do they get it done?
I'm a proud Brazilian, but I'm not biased one. That said, I see Pereira winning a decision. I'm leaning a decision or a late stoppage. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight. The matchup's too tricky, but I think based on what I'm seeing, I think Pereira wins the rematch.
Well, I'm sure there will be a lot of happy crackheads watching this because Poatan is one of the favorite fighters of this show. Speaking about the host, his favorite fighter of all time is a man called Wanderlei Silva, who he fell in love with as a young teenager, and it brought him on this amazing career in the world of mixed martial arts. Guilherme, as soon as I saw this guy was in a boxing match with Vitor first, I was like, this is a disaster. And genuinely, most of the time when I'm really worried about an old fighter getting in there, nothing that bad happens. You know, we saw it with Chael and Anderson. They get in, they tap each other, everything goes away. Yeah. But this one, I mean, I don't think it could have went any worse. For those of you who don't know, Wanderlei Silva fought in an exhibition. He was disqualified for using his head. His opponent's son then KO'd him when a skirmish broke out in the ring afterwards. There is horrific footage, as you guys can see here, of Mr. Silva hitting the ground. This one of the most fearsome fighters in the world in the early 2000s. One of the iconic fighters of the sport. To see him getting dragged into the corner like this is just, it's absolutely harrowing. My blood runs cold just seeing it. Since then, we've seen updates, various updates from Wanderlei with his face in quite a bad spot. And Guilherme, we've been relying on you, as we always do when it comes to Brazilian news like this. I saw a recent article you put out saying there should be some legal action ahead for Wanderlei Silva and the son of his opponent. I believe his name is Fratches. Is that the name of the opponent? Oh, come on. I tried, mate.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, Wanderlei has gone on social media. His manager, his lawyer, they're saying they're going to file a lawsuit against him. I don't know if they have pressed charges against him. But yeah, that's definitely going to have a lawsuit coming because that was brutal. He wasn't licensed. He was just sitting in the stand in the chairs on front row as a fan. Like he walked out carrying one of Freitas, his father's belts in boxing, and he just stormed into the ring for that. It was sad to watch. It was really sad. Like I said, when they announced this, I knew it wasn't the right decision because Wanderlei, he shouldn't be fighting anymore. Like he has fought a lot already over the past few decades, and he shouldn't be there. And then he was fighting Vitor. Vitor seems in a much better shape than Wanderlei. And then when he was replaced by Asselin Freitas, I knew Wanderlei there was no way he would win this fight. Because Vitor, maybe Vitor got there with the emotions of like facing a longtime rival and all that, and maybe Wanderlei could get an advantage because of that. But Freitas there was no way Wanderlei was winning that, and it's just brutal to watch, man. They were all suspended. Wanderlei Silva has a 6-month suspension, Freitas as well, but it's pointless because Wanderlei is not gonna fight again. But and I don't think they should. I think that's the message that they all should have there. I saw Fabrício Werdum doing an interview with him in Brazil where he said that he's done fighting and he thinks Wanderlei should too. And so hopefully that's it for him.
What's the reaction been like in Brazil? Like I've had so many people from when I was into MMA back in the day who have fell out of love with MMA, they're seeing this footage with Wanderlei and they're just straight back in going, how can this happen? I'm sure he's revered in Brazil. Like this guy, an icon of the sport, in Curitiba especially. Is there outrage in Brazil because of this?
There was a mixed reaction. That was the topic of the day, the topic of the week after the whole incident because it aired on live on Globo, which is the biggest network in Latin America, and And Global aired this event. They had a whole deal with Spaten, which is a beer company, which is a big company in Brazil. Like it's a big deal. And Global was doing appearance with Global and with Wanderley and Freitas and ton of shows. They were promoting this like they never promoted UFC. Like, and so it was a big deal. And then this happens. Like, I've received a ton of messages all day for days about this incident. Everybody asking about, like, old people would ask you. They never asked me anything about any fights, and they were asked about this because that was a massive deal. And I wonder if it's part of the beer company is gonna do another show. They have plans to do it, Wanderley and Vitor, early next year before the whole thing, but I don't know anymore. I'm curious to see because of the bad publicity they got from this.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I can only imagine. And I want to ask this next question, but I want to preface this that this kind of stuff happens in the UK, in Ireland, in America all the time. In no way am I suggesting this has anything to do with this fight taking place in Brazil. But was there any part of you like, how is this guy fighting? How is he allowed to fight? Because as we know, during the class action lawsuit, there was things revealed from Wanderlei's side about the brain damage he has, about the mood swings he has. And then for him to sign up to something like this, it just seems completely crazy. And again, that's not to say that it's not happening all over the world anyway, but just with such a star, I can't help but feel a certain way, you know?
Yeah, it's like we see Mike Tyson boxing Jake Paul. It doesn't make any sense.
Yes.
That's why I asked Wanderlei Silva a week before the fight. I asked him about that, if there was any concerns of him fighting after everything he said in the past. And he's like, I've done all the exams and all that. And I do believe that he has done medical exams going into this. That's really the reason why Vitor Belfort was put on the fight, because he did exams and stuff showed up in his brain. For a major company to decide to go this direction, for Friday with such history, documented history, like himself revealing those type of things, I don't think that was the smart call, a smart call by the company to choose a 50-year-old with that has gone on record saying that he has like CTE symptoms or stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sorry to make you speak about this. I know it's a troubling story of a great icon in the sport. Speaking of Brazilian icons, you're going to be a busy man next week. UFC Rio rolling into town. And as you said at the top of the show, there is 1A and, oh, wow, I feel like I'm right there. I'm going to get sunburned if you keep this up. I have no sunblock on. What are you doing? I could die out here. But we have Charles Oliveira against Gamrot. As you said, it's Pereira and Charles Oliveira in terms of who is the most popular fighter over there. Excitement levels in Brazil. And we know, as you mentioned, the Globo deal, back when they were with the UFC, it made things a lot more visible nationally. But is there still a buzz when Charles Oliveira fights in Brazil?
Yeah, definitely. The last UFC event here in Rio was headlined by Pantoja, and they had to bring Aldo back from retirement to add something to the card. But the sales were just poor. Like to during 5 weeks, like 3 or 4 days before the event, you could go to a Venom store at a mall and buy a shirt and get a UFC ticket for free. That's how bad it was. And when they announced they were going back to Rio, I wonder how bad it would be, because we had no idea that Charles could be on this card, because he's such a massive star and he gets paid good money. And for him to headline a UFC event in Rio that doesn't generate anything in terms of ticket sales and all that, and a fight night, not a pay-per-view. I was really surprised. Everybody was really surprised to see him on the card. And when tickets went on sale, like it was like this, it was sold out quickly. And they didn't put all the tickets on sale on the first day, so we had like 3 days of sale. But If all tickets were available in one day, they would be sold out in like 2 hours. Charles Oliveira has that power. So that's a lot of buzz. Even without Global, you know, that shows the power of Charles Oliveira on social media, how much of how big of a star he has become. So yeah, that's a massive one, especially for the like hardcore MMA fans. But Charles Oliveira draws good numbers in Brazil, definitely.
I'm very much looking forward to Guilherme, but this is my question to you, right? Because I'll admit it, like, I'm a bit jaded, you know? I was here. I was here when the great Conor McGregor folded up your boy, Diego Brandão, at the Three Arena, okay? I'm sorry. I spoke too soon. I got too confident. But what I'm saying is, when these MMA events come to Ireland now, I'm kind of like, it's got to be something very special. And you've had special, special nights covering UFC in Rio. Do you still get the old excitement like you used to? Or are you like me, a jaded old asshole when everyone else is getting very excited?
We are getting old, right? But but still, you still have a lot of events going there. We have like PFL, we have Bellator going all the time to Ireland. We don't. We never had a Bellator event in Brazil. We never had a PFL event in Brazil. And the UFC used to come here like 7 times a year, 5 times a year. And now, if lucky, we get one. And other than that, it's just small promotions. So every time the UFC comes, for us media, it's good times because we have an event to go. Like, we have a big deal. We have something to cover in person. We can like see colleagues from other cities that come to Rio to go to São Paulo. So it's always fun times. It's not the same. Like, I mean, this event, Charles Oliveira, is going to be a cool one because there's a lot of hype around him. But yeah, when it's just another regular card, it's a bit disappointing. But given the fact that we don't have that so many events coming, it's always fun. It's always fun times.
Well, if you want some fun times, make sure you get over to Guilherme Cruz and check out all his stuff on MMA fighting. He is the greatest Brazilian combat sports journalist of all time. Guilherme, thank you so much for coming back on the show. We're going to hit a break now. I'm going to bring in some more world-class journalists to talk some poo-poo with me about fighting. I love you very much, my friend. Crackheads. How about that, you know? Oh, Chuck and Ben thought they could ruin my show by not showing up for work. I get Guilherme Cruz on to lay the smack down all about all things Brazilian MMA, which is very topical at the moment. Guess what else is topical at the moment? I happen to be sitting in it. That's right, Ireland, ladies and gentlemen. Irish MMA, lots of things to talk about. Mr. Ian Garry being announced for a fight with Bilal Muhammad. We have Conor McGregor saying all kinds of things, really, in the promotion in the lead up to the BKFC event in Newark. 6 month operation. And of course, just hours away from the PFL doing the rematch between Usman Nurmagomedov and Paul Hughes in Dubai. Well, let me welcome in two gentlemen with whom I form the Trident of Knowledge. One of them is Severe MMA's Andy Stevenson, and he's joining us from across the city in Dublin. And we also have a man who's gone the extra mile, who is going to rub it in our faces that we didn't make the effort to go to the Middle East, because there he is sitting in the media room in Dubai. It's Donna Corby. Lads, back together at last. How are we feeling? Donna, first, you're in Dubai. You get the chair here, because obviously you've made more effort than all of us.
Well, that is true. I am a more serious Irish journalist than you two. I care more about Paul Hughes than you two do. I obviously got on the plane, you two didn't. So, again, with that out of the way now, it's great to be back, and it's great to have you try together again.
Andy, how are you? Why aren't you in Dubai, if you don't mind me asking? I hear you on the Old Triangle, your fantastic podcast. Oh, this is one of the biggest Irish MMA fights of all time. Neither you nor Ian nor Quilcha seem to be in Dubai. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm poor. That's really the reason. I cannot afford the luxuries that apparently Blanchardstown can. Also, it was a lovely introduction that you gave us, you know, world-class journalists. I assumed that I was on the wrong stream. I joined the wrong Zoom link because I'm not sure where they are, but I'm sure they're on the way.
Well, listen, I am here, in fairness to me. I'm just joking. I love you, boys. I know you do fantastic work. And that's why I have you here, because I don't want everyone in the world to just take my word on how Irish people feel about things. I get to bring you guys on and say, see, I told you. See what they're saying? First one up, Ian Garry v. Bilal Mohammed. It's going down in Doha, Qatar. He's on his way back to do a seminar in SBG. Very exciting news, October 30th. But tell me this. Andy, I'll start with you. Do you think Ian Garry was happy about this fight? Is this the kind of fight you think he was looking for right now?
100%. Yeah, he's been calling for this fight for a long time. I think in a number of aspects, it makes a lot of sense for him. Obviously, Bilal is coming off the loss. He's just relinquished the title. Ian probably sees Bilal as one of the older, he is one of the older fighters at the top of the division. And, you know, when you've got the likes of Sean Brady, he's obviously got the loss to Shavkat already. A win against the guy who's just lost the belt, is sitting in the number one contender spot, and who holds a win, a KO win over Sean Brady, seems like a bit of a no-brainer to me. So he's been calling for this for a while. He wanted it in Chicago. He's getting it in Qatar.
Donna Corby, tell me this. In terms of a matchup, a lot of people would have circled Bilal as one of the few guys who could be a risky matchup for Ian, given that he's a wrestler, given that we haven't seen Ian in against an out-and-out wrestler. What do you think of the matchup?
Yeah, look, it's obviously the toughest one at the top of the division for him. I guess, like, even including probably Jack Della Maddalena and maybe even Islam Makhachev, depending on what happens there. But, yeah, look, I think Ian, like, since, I mean, you guys have known him since he started out in the amateurs, and he's someone who is, one might say he's maybe more a competitor than a out-and-out fighter, if you know what I mean. And I think he loves fighting someone who people think there's a chance he's not going to beat. I think he loves going up the levels, going through the levels, and look, number one ranked UFC fighter, it doesn't matter who that is. If Ian sees that number next to their name, he's going to want to fight him. And so I think all credit to Ian Machado Garry, and hopefully, finally, some respect for our fellow Irishman.
Well, I mean, he always got lots of respect here. Do you know how much respect? I'm going to bring up a graphic right now. This is how much respect we have. We made this ahead of time. Watch. Wham! Look at that. Ian Garry. Here he is saying all kinds of things on his new post. Oh, Andy has something to say, I think, on Instagram here. It says, you're going to see speed like you've never seen before. Bilal Mohammed, a respected former champion. I can't read. It's too small for me to read the rest of that. But you get the idea. He thinks he's going to make shite of Bilal Mohammed, basically. And I do believe we also have... There it is. Well played, in fairness to Bilal Mohammed. A rare win for the former champion of the world. Is this getting the juices flowing for you, Andy? Do you like this back and forth? Yes, yes.
I mean, like, I have a few questions about this graphic. One, who is making this graphic? Fire them. Secondly, who is this quote to? You know the way you see these graphics, like, it's usually from an interview. Is this just Ian has a quote from himself that he's putting in quotes on Instagram? Is that what's happening here? I mean, I don't know.
He told the Future Group, bro. He obviously told the Future Group.
That's what I'm saying, don't it? You know what I mean? In conversation with friends and backers afterwards.
It was a 10-9 Bilal, in fairness, in that one, which is not very common for Bilal on social media. But look, it's going to be this build-up is going to be quite interesting, because a lot of people don't like Ian Garry. A lot of people don't like Bilal Mohammed. And I have no idea which way it's going to fall as far as, like, who becomes the babyface, which one wins the fans. Are people just looking for a double KO? It's going to be, yeah, interesting to see how it plays out.
Donna, this is a good point Andy makes here. Not only, like, do these guys get a bit of shit online and off the fan base, they also have styles that people, you know, they get their backs up against. They're like, oh, this was boring. Even though they're tremendous at this sport, I think Garry is sensational at winning fights. I think he treats this like a sport, and you can see that when he's performing. He's like, I'm going to do what I have to do to win. Sometimes, of course, he can be absolutely spectacular, as we saw on his path to the UFC. My issue here is, if you were just looking at the numbers and looking where these guys, and if this was a perfect meritocracy, I would say, of course, Ian Garry gets the next crack at the title if he beats the former champion of the world. There is obviously a logjam. There is Shavkat, who was promised the next shot. There's Sean Brady, who's floating around there too. There's lots of guys in and around this position. My issue is, if these guys aren't the most beloved fighters on the roster, if they have a fight that doesn't give us a spectacular conclusion, does that put them behind the eight ball in terms of being the next one to fight for the title?
The answer is absolutely yes. I mean, historically, that's what it is. And look, I can't imagine the UFC are clamoring to get Bilal another title shot. I can't imagine after his last few performances. I think Ian's a little younger, a little bit more like, I think Ian's heat is a little less like go away X-Pac heat. Like, I think people actually do dislike Ian quite genuinely. So I think that's probably something that benefits him a little bit. Like they would view him as a good heel for someone like Makhachev. And obviously if Makhachev wins the belt, Bilal's not going to be fighting him. And obviously he would be a great heel for De La Maddalena. I think both of them would be viewed as like good opponents for Ian. So yeah, I think he's in probably a better spot than Bilal. And also, by virtue of beating someone like Bilal, you are kind of viewed as having done something good for the community, right? Because of what you're saying, as like a polarizing figure. So yeah, I think, I mean, Sean Brady is always going to be kind of a tough sell. I mean, even that Leon Edwards fight, people were leaving the arena watching it. Like, people go on about how boring Ian is. Go watch Sean Brady and Leon Edwards. I dare you. Try to sit through that whole thing.
Oh my God.
So, you know, I think, I think go watch Ian and Carlos Branches. I think you're going to find a much more entertaining fight there. So I think, yeah, I think Ian is probably going to be in a very good position if he gets the result, but he probably needs a little something special instead of just, you know, five rounds of, or it's not going to be five rounds, three rounds of kind of like grappling and kind of winning on points.
Well, look at this guy providing me with a segue, you know, throwing some shade at Sean Brady on the way, which we always appreciate. And I'm never afraid to throw a few digs. Andy Stevenson, he mentioned it there. Three rounds. Who does this suit more? I think I know.
I think it's probably Bilal, right? For three rounds. I mean, does it really matter? I mean, like, I was kind of, I expected this was five rounds, to be honest with you. This is the first time it's three rounds. I was like, oh, sorry. Of course it's a five round.
Apologies.
So that joke's on me. But I mean, do you know what? Actually, I could see this factory in Ian Gary's favor. I'm going to do a complete flip flop here because I feel like Ian fights at range. If he can keep away from, like, I think he's the better striker between the two of them. Pretty clearly, if he can keep it on the feet, he's got some great grappling as well. If he can, you know, if he can evade and learn from Jack Della Maddalena's performance against Bilal Muhammad, who was phenomenal as far as quelling the grappling offenses from Bilal. I think Ian can, you know, just pick him off at range, use his jab, use his front kicks, and really, I could see a scenario where he coasts to a three round decision victory here.
Yeah, and look, you're right in a way. Who does the three round suit? Probably the guy who wins the first round the best. Like that is the reality of the situation. It really, I agree with you in terms of where the fight takes place. Who is dictating where it's taking place? Will win this fight. And honestly, I think a lot of people, similar to when McGregor was on his come up, people were like, oh, well, as soon as a wrestler comes into play, and obviously, as we saw during that first run in particular, Chad Mendes, it didn't faze him, and he was able to get the job done. So let's see if, once again, Ian follows in Conor McGregor's footsteps with that one. Speaking of Conor McGregor, making a lot of headlines over here, boys. Doing a lot of big shows, and I believe we have a big clip concerning his next move, which, as we know, will take place at the White House.
It can ignite the support for the people of Ireland.
Is this a done deal?
Because we need.
Are you definitely? Is this a done deal? You're in.
Done deal, signed, delivered. It ain't a negotiation.
Wow.
It's a done deal, signed, delivered. McGregor will compete in the White House for UFC's 200 for the America's 250th.
Did you talk to Dana about it? Dana's got to sign off. I would imagine. No.
Me and Dana are in constant communications. We've done incredible business together. And the highest generating fighter of all time in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. They've just signed a breathtaking deal with Paramount, where we go to cable TV.
He gets his own music.
$7.7 billion that deal was approved for. And ready to rock, baby. Bring in the big dog, the Mac G.
Bringing in the big dog. His new accent is absolutely fantastic. One of his all-time accents, as far as I'm concerned. But lads, I'll go to Dunne first. How confident are you, 8 months out, that we will see? It's just so many things have to go right. All right, I just want to say for everyone, the crackheads in the chat, obviously, everything needs to go very according to plan for a fight to even happen at the White House. But yeah, the BITB have talked about this three times or something. Let me have this one segment with the lads where we speculate. You know, that's me, you know, best friends, but. Dunne, so tell me this. Are we getting way too ahead of ourselves thinking this is the game on? Conor McGregor, he's back, baby.
I guess so, but I just find it's just so much fun. Like every time he starts talking this way, it's so silly. It's so fun. Like, look, yeah, we got like 8 months until it happens. He's going to have a 6 month training camp where he doesn't look at his phone once.
6 month operation. 6 month operation is what it is.
He rules, man. I think there's nothing he could do, evidently, that I wouldn't say that he rules. I think he's going to do it. He's going to fight. And you know what? He's going to knock out Michael Chandler, too.
Oh, my God. Just to clarify, when Dunne is saying he rules, that isn't a term we use here, as in, like, he's the president of Ireland. He rules that he does not. Just to make that clear, met a lot of Americans at the...
Well, also, because there's a lot of... There's a lot of bias in our political system, and they don't allow the people's candidates to run. Maria Steen, obviously Conor McGregor would have been great candidates, but unfortunately, neither of them got
what
their nomination.
What a shame, huh?
So, silence by the government of Ireland. Oh my God, yeah. Andy Stevenson, how do you follow that one up? I don't know how you will, but how excited are we?
Just not. It's not happening. Like, it's not. Come on. Like, let's be real. Like, there's a non-zero chance this happens. Sure. In all likelihood, this is not happening. You know, it's gone from it's signed, sealed, delivered. It's a done deal. To already now he's talking about, well, you know, they gotta show me the money here. So like, is it not a done deal? It was a done deal on Sean Hannity's show. Now it's not a done deal. You know, we had him coming back against Michael Chandler. We had him running for presidency, we had him, you know, presenting fresh new evidence in the appeal. We had him fighting Logan Paul in a boxing match. We've had all of these, you know, things presented to us that have turned out to not be the case or not to have come to fruition. So, like, come on, like, what? How can we possibly believe this? Like, will he fight again? Maybe, but am I confident? Not even remotely. No.
Well, look at this. And who says we don't get differing opinions here? Like, I mean, Dunne Corby, Conor McGregor's going to knock out Chandler on the White House lawn. Andy Stevens saying it absolutely won't happen. What will happen is a fight between Jeremy Stevens and Mike Perry this weekend in Newark, New Jersey. I'm not a big BKFC guy. I'll admit it. The Artem Lobov fight with the Russian dude, that wasn't BKFC. It was in... I forget the name of the thing. It had them bales of hay around the ring. He got beat up by a silver medalist. Mahatch, was it? Yeah, something like that. Dunne Corby.
There's about a million guys in this press room who could tell you exactly what it was, but I'm afraid to ask them.
Don't ask them, please. Don't say Artem Lobov too loudly over there either. But tell me this. His role as a BKFC promoter, like, to give him credit, he is doing a great job for them in terms of power match. There we go. But I mean, is it fair to say, Dunne, like, he is raising all kinds of awareness for BKFC? Like, you've gone to BKFC events, right? And I'm sure a big part of, like, your coverage would be like, well, we're going to get a few minutes with Conor if we go. And I know you have got that. Like, this is pretty much a dream partnership for them, you'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look, having a name like that involved in your thing, having someone like that who's going to do, you know, like, he does a decent amount of media for them. He's not someone who necessarily loves talking to the press, but, you know, I know that he loves talking, but, like, if he cannot be doing media, he likes that. So, yeah, he does, like, a lot for them. He did that round table. I think he was going to be on an Ariel show, and, of course, decided Sean Hannity was the bigger name. to rep Hannity a bit better. But, he's, like, I mean, how could you not have, the biggest name ever in combat sports as your promoter, and that not be a good thing, you know? And again, that's pretty much no matter what, like I said that before, but, you know, he rules, he's so funny. It's like, no matter what he does, evidently, there is literally nothing he can do that will make people not think it's awesome that he's the promoter.
There's some classic Dunne Corby's going on here today. I think Andy Stevens would agree with me. Andy, tell me this, right? Like, you know, Dunne's a crackhead. He will watch two lads fighting on the side of the road. If he's driving past, he's pulling over. He's saying, do you know what? Yeah, he's fighting people out his back garden. I've seen the videos. I'm intimidated by the man. I'm meant to be from the crazy part of town. Dunne Corby, way crazier than me. Andy Stevens. Yes, that's exactly what he is. Andy, with all this said, me giving him, like, you know, he's helping spread the word about BKFC. Dunne obviously saying the amount of media he does for them. You're more of a purist. You're more of a, you know, You'd rather be watching amateur MMA, you sick fuck, than actual big-time sports, you know what I mean? So tell me this, will you be tuning in to BKFC tomorrow night in Newark based on the promotion that's been evidently shoved it down your face for the last week?
I'll probably catch a highlights clip of you know, some of the action, maybe the Mike Perry, you know, probably just Mike Perry. The Mike Perry fight, that's probably the extent that I will watch. Maybe if there's a crazy KO, I'll catch a clip. So I mean, look, I make no mistake, I absolutely think he adds something to that promotion. I think there's a lot more eyes on it because of Conor McGregor. It's not really for me, but also doesn't need to be for me. I think there's a lot of people who will watch it. It's vicious. It is like, it's the type of sport, you know, like it's kind of like what slap fighting is trying to be. I think that's what bare knuckle actually is, in that it's a sport kind of designed for the social media age, for clips like that, for just the gore and the brutality. And it's more of a sport, but clearly way more of a sport than the likes of a slap fighting.
Now that you mention it, I forgot to speak about Power Slap 15, which has happened this weekend. Everybody, just to let you know, I can't believe I forgot one of the biggest fights of the weekend.
Crazy Hawaiian fighting?
Doesn't he fight on every single one of them? So I assume, yes, he is. Yeah. I want to talk about PFL Dubai. Obviously, we didn't want to spend too much of the top because the fights are taking place as we speak about this. Donna Corby is in the press room right now. Donna, the floor is yours. Tell us. You wrote a great piece about this, by the way, how this fight came together. And I think one of the amazing things you put in there is about how this venue, how this location is perfect. Explain this to the crackheads here. Why is Dubai such a perfect location for not just Nurmagomedov, for Paul Hughes as well?
Yeah, so you'll see, like, a lot of the time in combat sports, like a massive fight will get brought to Saudi, or, I mean, you see it in the UFC all the time. They'll bring some huge fight to some mad city in the US. I don't want to slag any particular place off. And you'll be like, that really takes the steam out of it. Like, you'll see, I'm not slagging off Salt Lake City, right? But how much more sick would that Leon Edwards head kick have been if it was, you know, in either Leon or Usman's, you know, like, hometowns? Like, if that was in, you know, like I know Usman has a history in Nigeria. If that was in Africa somewhere, or if that were, you know, in London or Birmingham or something, like, how sick would that have been instead of, you know, happening in Salt Lake? And what happens here is, like, this is one of these fights that's had, you know, Dubai have come in and invested and paid their side fee and brought this fight to here. But it's the perfect location because, obviously, massive Muslim community. It's a great Muslim nation, or a great Muslim region, and the UAE. But also, you have these huge amounts of Irish expats who just love Paul Hughes and just support him. It's also an easy enough flight from Dublin to Dubai. It's a single flight. For example, Saudi, there's no direct Dublin to Riyadh flight. It's one flight from Sydney. It's one flight from a lot of major Australian airports. So you get the diaspora over there as well. So you have it about 50-50. And, you know, the people love anyone with Nurmagomedov in their surname. And then the Irish people will, of course, come and support their own and Paul Hughes. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that both of these fights happened in Dubai has actually been sick. And probably one of the best examples in combat sports of, like, the site fee and the site bid, like, really working and making sense.
Just before I go over to you, Andy, I was wondering about that, Donna. There was the reports of, like, a few incidents popping off. I know that Paddy McCurry was on Andy Stevenson's podcast telling all types of war stories from the first trip to Dubai. We saw the hand. We actually had you on the show directly after the handbags at the weigh-in last time. Has it been a more peaceful environment given the breaking of bread between Habib and Paul Hughes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just everything about it is so much less, like, ugly than the last one, just in terms of, like, I haven't heard, I haven't really heard much of Conor's name around the week, like, just because it's not, like last time it was such a vital part of the story. It was, like, Ireland versus Dagestan and McGregor and Khabib, and they're, you know, they're bringing that back. And, you know, and that was, like, you know, one of the most ugly fight buildups, like, of all time. So, this one, you know, you just have two teams who respect each other. You've two fighters who had a really great fight the last time. You've a great set of media from everywhere, a great set of fans from everywhere. And yeah, like, there was, like, maybe it looked like maybe something might kick off yesterday at the weigh-ins, but really it was just a great, you know, show of support from both sides. And I think really, like, it wasn't quite as packed out as the weigh-ins were for the first one, but everything about this week has felt big. And yeah, there hasn't been any big feuding between the fans, at least that I'm aware of. Although, let's see when the Irish gets a drink into them tonight. I might be eating my words.
Irish people don't drink that much. Like, what the hell? Andy Stevenson, tell me this. How much do you think it's helped Paul to have that situation with Conor McGregor afterwards? Obviously, there was the scenes between Habib and Paul after the first fight. Incredibly close fight. Habib credits Ireland. He's like, we need to respect these people. These donate more money to Palestine than any other country in the world. It kind of felt like a uniting moment between the two factions there. Obviously, there was Conor McGregor on there, and he said things about Paul and the part of Ireland that he lives in that rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way. But I felt it propelled Paul into a completely different stratosphere. We were there in Belfast and we saw how much he means to the people there. Is it fair to say, like, he's a completely different commodity for Ireland than he was in the lead up to the first fight?
Without a doubt. And like to the previous point, I suppose, around the camps and how different the atmosphere is now. Like, there's kind of two elements to that. Like, there's the fact that they had the first fight, he's kind of gained the respect, because like coming into this one, really this is the time where they could have gone with an Ireland versus Dagestan narrative. You've got John Mitchell, who lost earlier on today, fighting a Dagestan fighter. Obviously Artem Lobov was supposed to be on the card fighting the guy who kind of kicked off all of this this bad blood in the aftermath of McGregor Khabib. But then, because Paul had that moment in the cage with Khabib, and because he had the spat with McGregor online, it completely galvanized support behind him. Like, I was completely shocked that, like, with all of the transgressions that Conor McGregor has kind of been through and you know, given reason for many fans to fall off the bandwagon, and none more so, I suppose, than being accused of sexual assault and you know, found liable for that in court. It wasn't really that was the tipping point for a lot of Irish MMA fans. It was his attacks of Paul Hughes' identity. And from there, the support just entirely rallied around Paul. And, that moment in Belfast earlier on this year where he's headlining the SSR Arena, like, that was something special. That's something that I haven't seen in a number of years in Irish MMA. I know, obviously, you lads were there that night too. I know you felt the same way. And I feel like, you know, coming into this fight, he has got such a swell of support around him. I was even watching while Guillermo was on earlier on, UTV were doing actually a spot on the 6 o'clock news, and they had both Paul and Caelan, spotlighted here. They had interviews with the two of them. Northern Ireland is getting behind MMA, I think, now. And it's going to be very interesting to see. I was having, I kind of threw out the suggestion of, if Paul can do this, if he can beat Usman Nurmagomedov in the rematch, could he perhaps bring the trilogy back to Belfast, and would the likes of a Windsor Park, that be an option? Now, I am not educated enough and I'm not from, the area to be able to speak eloquently on the cultural significance of Windsor Park. It's predominantly, I think it's Linfield play there. It's predominantly, more the loyalist Protestant side of the community. But I feel like Paul has done a phenomenal job of uniting both, Catholics, Protestants, nationalists, loyalists up the north. And I see him as someone who the entire region can get behind. And if ever there was a Catholic man who represents, who plays GAA football and represents the tricolour, to go in there and be the guy that the support are getting behind in the likes of a Windsor Park, I feel like it could be a guy like Paul Hughes. So, absolutely. He has the whole country behind him. And that's, obviously only speaking about the North right there, but North and South alike, he's beloved in Ireland.
Absolutely. And look, I think, we've both read the brilliant book by Donald McRae in Sunshine, Orange Shadow, about how combat sports kind of has rose above the partition, or certainly did in the 80s and the 70s during the time of the Troubles. And having been in Windsor Park for Crocker v Donovan too, I think that's absolutely true. The people of Belfast, regardless of their background, seem to be all Crocker people. It's not about he's from Sandy Row or he's from here or there. They're all behind their guy because he's from that city. We're going to take a bigger zoom in on this fight when we come back. We have to go to a break. You want to see the invoice done at Corby's after sending in for this. So let's go to the break and we'll be back in 2 minutes to talk about this a bit more. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. And this is the final segment of the show. Don't get too upset, okay? It's here every Friday. You can join the crack every Friday. And these guys have been here many times. I put them on the bench. I put them on the bench for a little bit. They're back in now, starting players. Lads, can I tell you something that has concerned a lot of Irish people about this second fight that I've heard a lot about, that I may have strengthened the argument somewhat during these various podcasts that we do? here it is. I thought Paul Hughes won the first fight. And, you know, I looked online earlier because I got the first couple of rounds of John Mitchell's fight, who happened to be fighting a gentleman from Dagestan. And I saw, like, I scored the first round for John, and then I had to check out. We had a computer issue. Me and Andy handled it fantastically well. Thank you very much, On Air Jordan, who's not here to help us. Thank you, Andy, the greatest. And then suddenly I see, wow, an Irishman just got robbed here in Dubai. And then a lot of people were saying, Paul needs to finish this guy if he wants to win this fight. He obviously won the last fight. I didn't say obvious, right? I just said I scored it for him personally. But having watched the John Mitchell fight, I saw your updates, Andy Stevenson. Did that strengthen your resolve in thinking Paul Hughes is going to have to put this lad away tonight?
It definitely didn't make me feel confident that we would get some accurate judging here. Like, I definitely don't think that John Mitchell was robbed, but there was a lone 30-26 scorecard. Like, I think it was...
What the fuck was that? How 30-26, insane.
To me, he definitely won the first round. And even if you say, you know, he lost every round, there was no 10-8 round in that fight whatsoever. So, second fight of the night, when we're going into... You know, the biggest rematch in PFL history, probably the best fight in PFL history, and one where the entire talking point, or not the entire talking point, but part of the talking point coming out of the first outing was the scorecards. Which way did you score? Did you have it for Paul? Did you have it for Usman? So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't fill you with confidence. Let me say that. So, I would love to see that judge removed from the card. I think how they should handle it when you've got a fight like that coming up, but who knows what the way it's going to shake out.
Donna Corby, don't let him speak about Dubai like this. Don't let him speak about Dubai like this. Not in your presence.
That 30-26, legitimately, like when I saw it on, like, during the pre-show, we were talking about like what we were going to talk about. It's like, oh, does Paul need to stop him? I was like, no, like, you know, he can get a decision, whatever. That 30-26 absolutely changed my mind 100%. He definitely needs to stop him because that decision is going the way of the guy whose surname is Nurmagomedov in the Middle East for fucking sure if it goes five rounds. So, yeah, Paul needs to stop him and probably needs to do it twice too, like Chael Sonnen and Craig Jones, just to be 100% sure.
Obviously, oh,
what a terrible scorecard. 30-26. You never
even
seen
it. It was so bad.
It's fucking terrible. It's absolutely
ridiculous. John Mitchell arguably maybe slightly could have won.
I was like, he looks great. I was like, the kid looks great. I wasn't able to tune in for the whole thing, but I thought he certainly won the first round. And it was a close round, but 30-26, fucking insane.
I thought he won the first round too. I thought it was 20, clear.
Joe Rogan was one of the judges.
Wow. Let me move on to this next part, because obviously he's not the only Irishman, as we said. John Mitchell fought earlier, but Caelan Loughran making his debut here. Caelan Loughran, a man who strikes a chord in the Irish MMA heart. The people love this guy. It was meant to be Lewis McGrillen, who is a massive prospect out of Manchester top team. Another guy who really the fan base have embraced. It was personality v personality. We had a great replacement in Jack Cartwright coming at the 11th hour. Both men used to be Cage Warriors bantamweight champion. Caelan coming in a heavy favorite this time. Donna, tell me what it's been like to be around Caelan this weekend. He seems absolutely delighted with this new situation with PFL.
I mean, look, been around him probably quite a bit more than Paul. I think Paul's not staying at the Fighter Hotel. I think he's got like his own.
Call him a diva? Diva? Is that what you're saying?
He's preparing himself as best he can.
Say it.
But I, and I, you know, I think that Caelan is in tremendous form. You know, there's an argument to be made. So some fans are making this to me now. I think it's a little bit much. But if you look at the two fights he lost in the UFC, both on short notice, both with late opponent changes. So I think you could argue undefeated in fights where he had the correct amount of preparation time in the UFC. So. Caelan, and that would make him undefeated in his whole career. So I think he's in a good position. Jack looked, obviously he asked for the catch weight. He asked for the 140 because he came in on short notice, and fair play to him. But, you know, he didn't look phenomenal. I mean, this is coming from me, who's, you know, never looks phenomenal on scales. But I think,
hey.
I think Jack,
I think
Jack
here,
didn't look his best. So, yeah, I would be confident in Caelan, not just because I'm Irish, but just sort of fact that he got a full camp, the fact that, you know, he's fought it at the top level of the UFC, even the fights he's lost, you know, he's competed at that top, you know, UFC level. So I think he's probably got this one. Even though Jack is a very, very good competitor as well.
What are we thinking, Andy? Do you like everything you're hearing from Caelan this week? I know you've interviewed him ahead of this fight.
Yeah, I'm really liking what I'm hearing. It is interesting. Like, he's kind of talking about this being almost like the last chapter of his career, which kind of seems crazy because it feels like only yesterday that he kind of enters the pro space. But he's got a big task in his hands, I think, against Jack Carter. Like, I don't think this is an easy replacement fight compared to Lewis McGrillen. You will remember very well, PT, you know, the one night tournament that he had in Cage Warriors when he was kind of breaking on. He had that rat tail. Like, he just looked like an absolute psychopath. And he was starching lads. And now that's, you know, it's been some time since then. But, you know, he was in Octagon there not too long ago. He looked really good. The one thing that I would kind of maybe highlight is he was due to fight twice for the Octagon title. Had to pull out of both of those fights and due to injury, I believe, and has subsequently now signed with PFL, coming in on short notice. And I would feel like that really goes against him here. You factor in that it's a catchweight fight, you know, how in shape is Jack Cartwright coming into this? And when you think about Caelan Loughran, sometimes his fights are not the prettiest. Sometimes it's just he's dragging lads down and making their lives miserable. And I could see that happening tonight in Dubai. I could see, you know, Caelan and Jack maybe, you know, trading on the feet for a little bit. Jack Cartwright's got some big, big power in his hands. But ultimately, the smart play here is for Caelan to just take him down and wear on him and wear down the gas tank. And that's how I see the fight playing out tonight.
Yeah, I can see it happening in a similar
way. And also, it's also just very quickly worth noting as well about Caelan that since his last fight in the UFC and since he signed with the PFL and everything, he's now fighting for two because his brother Tiernan has had to call time on his career at the age of just 24. And I think that kind of motivates and as you know, that they would have had great ambitions together as brothers, and Tiernan, 5 years his junior, would have had, you know, ambitions of maybe even doing better than Caelan did, maybe even going further. And so I think the support is going to be with, it's definitely gonna, like, I think that he's going to be highly motivated, Caelan, just to kind of fight for the family and sort of compete on his brother's behalf as well, who's here, who's coaching, who I believe is going to go into a coaching career. And yeah, I think all of that adds to motivation, as well as the fact that Caelan's not too far from, you know, a shot at higher up in the card, Magomedov or Sergio Pettis. So, he's got a lot to fight for and a lot motivating.
And just to add before you come in, PC, they've also trained together. So I think as recently as the camp for McGrillen, they were sparring. Yes. You know, I don't think they did a huge amount of training together, but still they were, you know, in a much friendlier capacity, Cartwright and Loughran, than, you know, facing off inside a cage tonight.
Yeah. Before we go, lads, I just wanted to ask you, in terms of like what this fight would mean for Irish MMA, where it would sit alongside those great McGregor wins in Vegas and New York. Don't know, where would you put it? Like, if Paul Hughes managed to get the job done tonight against Usman Nurmagomedov, potentially the best fighter outside of the UFC in the weight class, where would you put that in terms of big Irish MMA wins?
Like, I mean, yeah, outside of anything Conor did, has there ever been anything even close?
Gary, maybe, MVP, you know, guys like that.
Yeah, Gary's had some great wins. I mean, certainly Gary and Bilal would be pretty big. I think from now on, any win Gary gets is going to be right up there with the Conor ones. But yeah, I just think, the Nurmagomedov family, all of the guys in there are so special. Everyone at that gym is so special. The beating them at all, the beating like even one of the lower level guys from the Nurmagomedov gym would constitute one of the great nights in Irish. I mean, we've never done it before. We've lost every single one. We just lost one today. So I think it'd be right up there with anything Conor did. It might even be, you know, like, it would be above more recent Conor wins, right? Like, it would be a bigger night than when Conor beat Cerrone. It would probably be a bigger night than when Conor beat Poirier the first time, maybe than when Conor beat Dennis Seaver. Like, he would be right in amongst those great Irish MMA. And certainly, yeah, there's a huge groundswell of support for Paul to do it. Inshallah.
What do you reckon, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what we're talking about big. Like, if we're talking about the scale of the night, anything McGregor has done is...
I mean, even the ones you mentioned there, pretty big.
The one McGregor fight I went to was the Seaver night in Boston, and that was insane. Insane. He's scaling the cage to go at Aldo. I think, take McGregor out, it's the biggest. Like, we've never had an Irish fighter surmount that hurdle of getting the Bellator/PFL title. Peter Queeley, Sinead Kavanagh, you know, Pedro Carvalho, obviously training out of SPG, and there's probably another one or two. Carl Moore, a couple I'm missing. I think it's the biggest, but I think and this is just the reality, is where we're at now, is it's Ian Garry and Paul Hughes just trading off. So if Ian goes in and beats Bilal, I think, you know, as far as the stature in the sport, you could argue that that is a bigger win. The fact that Paul is doing this against undefeated, you know, 19-0 Usman or Magomedov, and it's a rematch, I think that would make it a little bit bigger. If Ian were to obviously go in and win the UFC title, that would surpass it. They're just trading off now, so it's a really good spot right now for Irish MMA. And yeah, I think if you take McGregor out of the equation, this is the, you know, if he can get the job done tonight, it's the biggest of all time.
Right, lads. Well, beautiful stuff. Do you want to join me for the super chats that occupy the back end of the show, or are you all too busy and have to leave? Oh, look at Dunaco in the media room. Andy Stevenson has a dinner reservation at like 7:45. It is now 7:11 and he's staying. What commitment? Would you get it from Chuck and Ben? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I forget what the guys look like. Can we have the super chats, please, Andy? Who's better than On Air Jordan?
Thank Forever you. Actually getting back on the show.
Okay. No, I don't need to hear that. Mute those people immediately, Andy. Sorry. Barsaman says, $50. Holy shit, Barsaman. I mean, wow. I love Barcelona. Can I just say Sagrada Familia, the new camp? I've visited them all. I've drank your beautiful beer. Can't remember the name of it. San Miguel, of course. And I've poured it on my sunburned body to get rid of skin that was falling off due to the sunburn that I've inflicted on myself. Can we just have that again, Andy? I forgot to read the question. There we go. Pizzy, I love crack. I do too. I'm a massive crack user and abuser. Great show. Well done. Keep it up. Thank you, Barca man. 50 fucking snots. What? Jesus. Anything else? Yeah, I mean, big time show. Sleedo, who seems to have something of a Celtic cross there in his thing. 199. All appreciated. Just because Barca man threw his massive appendage down the table doesn't mean you all have to do it. Well done on remembering the super chats, PT. Aww. Well, I often forget them, as we know, but look, my Irish guys...
Trolling you for not reading them when they were sent.
You know, win or learn. Do we have anything else there, Andy? Here we go. Bougie Alpaca, which is my favorite name. Every time I see it, I'm like, that is talented. And as you can see, his...
I believe that's just a llama.
All right, don't tell the alpaca what it is, okay? The Bougie Alpaca is in control of what animal it is, okay? How does one in America, God bless America, watch Hughes v. Usman 2 HBO? The answer to that question is ESPN Unlimited. Do you know how I know? I checked in with Mr. GC Connor Brooks and he told me that information. So if he is incorrect, get over to his Twitter there and give him plenty of abuse. But lads,
we'll talk about this ESPN Unlimited thing. You know, people pay $100 in America for pay-per-view. $25 for this. And you get the whole month. And you also get to watch the fight of the year. Come on.
It's a great deal. Are you working for ESPN? Is that what's happening here?
What's the soup flavor today?
Oh, well. We're not going to get into any taking of the soup. Can we just say thank you very much to all the crackheads for watching? We're going to be back with a post-fight show. Me and Ariel Helwani, the aforementioned Ariel Helwani, are going to be back in the aftermath of Paul v. Usman 2. We're going to be back giving it to you right down the neck. Thank you very much, Andy Stevenson. Thank you very much to the Corby. Thank you very much, Guilherme Cruz. Thank you so much, Andrea Fernandez. On Air Jordan, we didn't miss you at all. Chuck, Ben, who are these people? See you guys in a few hours. Mwah.